all yours.
All right. Thank you, everybody. It is a great pleasure to be here talking to this crowd. My goal for tonight is to cover everything you need to know to assess and heal your neurochemistry, nerves, and hormones. Kind of an ambitious topic, so I'm going to depart from my normal methodology and try to ask you guys to be participatory with me. What I want to do is I want to have the whole group leave informed and inspired. I tend to talk fast, and so if I'm not reading the blank stares in anybody's eyes rightly, just people would cough like that. and let me know. I'll try to come back to the topic or answer questions throughout. At the end of the first hour, we'll take another hour of question and answer, so we should get a chance for everybody to have all of their nerves and hormones completely healed by the time we leave here today. I want to start by reviewing quickly where we've come from and where we're going to with the series. My goal of the series was to give everybody the practical tools to do self-healing. And as I try to break down that goal with my 16 years of clinical practice and continuing education and internship and university education, I realized that probably the most important thing that I could do would be to describe to people the fundamental duality of human existence. That really started us out on the nervous system, because we were talking about the sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous systems, which is the fight-or-flight stress response and the relaxation response of the human body. And so I charted a course for people in that talk where you could see the great arc of life, how you start out young and vibrant and dynamic, able to play well and rest well, and then you slowly climb this hill. It's almost like a roller coaster where you're going up the hill and you're just kind of bored, really. You know, it's like up and up and up, and it's just really slow, and you're kind of wondering. It's interesting, you're looking around, you see you're getting higher, but you're kind of wondering what life is all about. And then all of a sudden you hit the top, and you're only there for a fraction of a second. It's like a zero point. And then it's like, you know, all the way down the rest of the way. And we went over what the things are that bring you up that slope. And it's really functionality. The more functional you get, the more adult you get, the more capable you get, then the higher you climb on that roller coaster. And so what we are doing in life is we're basically trading off longevity for functionality. And then once you start to go down the other side, your body starts to slam on the brake pedal very hard. And it's kind of, they say it's all downhill from there, but it doesn't have to be. So we worked with assessing where you're at on that great arc and how to turn the roller coaster back and get yourself to stay at the zero point, stay at some peak efficiency without going down the other side. Then we talked about a very important and near and dear topic to my heart, which is to how to assess whether you're a cleanser or a builder. All people need to cleanse. We're all in an environment where the body can't eliminate as fast as the toxins bioaccumulate. The toxins come from outside of us and from within us, and usually the ones from inside of us are worse news, the ones that are coming from outside of us. But a lot of people, through being too far down the roller coaster ramp or through having some trauma that could be related to genetics or lifestyle, have lost the ability to do very good cleansing. And so this was a very important thing, because at that point, if you cleanse or if you alkalize, it's actually going to hurt you. So at that point, acid becomes your medicine. So I explained how alkaline and acid work as medicines for the human body. Cleanse or build, that is the question. Then, and we went, and I told you how to assess that and whatnot. Then we went and looked at pH. pH is arguably the most important climate in the body. It's the measure of alkalinity or acidity, and you measured it with litmus paper, and we did a saliva challenge test where you put lemon juice in your mouth, and you make your body think it's being acidified, and then you see what it does. And we saw that the body has three, it has basically the minerals are like the gold of the body. The minerals are the money and the gold of the body. And you know where the money of the body gets stored is everywhere. And so we saw that our body has like a checking account system where it can spend money quickly and make deposits quickly. And that is in the body's fluid system. So in the saliva and in the lymphatics is the checking account of the money of the body. And then when the checking account gets a little bit low, we might have to dig into the savings account. And so we found out that our body has a savings account in the organs and tissues, the more solid things, where the body can then, it gets a big draft and maybe it can't cover it in a checking account, but it can scurry out quickly and grab some minerals out of the kidneys, or out of the liver, or out of the muscle. Then you can imagine where this is going. Is that the body has like a retirement account, or literally like a Fort Knox. So it's got a deposit that's mostly in gold. And that is in the bones. And you see, if the checking account gets low, the savings account gets low, the body is able to go in and start to borrow from the Fort Knox system, from the gold system. Well, once you have gold, you're not interested in chump change paper anymore, you know, and you can start to go into a freewheeling spending style that cycles you down irrevocably. And so once your body has robbed or tapped into the bone account, it starts to hyperalkalinize. That's guanidine, one of the most poisonous alkalines. You go into alkalosis from tapping into your bone account. And your body just doesn't really want minerals. You can be slamming calcium and magnesium, and your body's like, I'm not, that's a big wad of change in my pocket when I've got this gold. So we talked about how people get into that trouble and how they get out of it. And then from there, we went on to talk about the blood sugar, balancing the blood sugar. There's no point in doing that blood sugar balance if your pH, your alkalinity is off and you're spending out of the wrong account. But priority-wise, if you've cleansed, if you've healed your pH, now you want to build your blood sugar normalization ability. So we talked about assessing 24-hour blood sugar, normalizing your blood sugar. Probably the most potent healing thing for many people is just to have normal blood sugar. It fixes stress, it fixes cravings, it fixes fungus and bacteria, it fixes nerve damage, it fixes immunity, a lot of different things. Well, I started to think, well, there's going to be nothing left. People are going to heal everything. No one will need to come and see me anymore. And so I decided to add another layer on there because they've done all that. We talked about the different types of immunity, how to assess your immunity and how to heal your immunity. And the big thing with immunity was restoring dynamic regulation, which is the ability of the immune system to ramp up or ramp down. So much of the immune system is kind of like a conversation in a busy room where one person talks a little louder and so everybody else talks a little louder, so everybody else talks a little louder, and pretty soon everybody's shouting at the top of their lungs. And the immune system has this situation where it goes up a little bit and then it likes to go back down. Now, if there's viruses, bacteria, funguses, and different things, they say, oh, the boss is away, and they go up, then the immune system has to go a little higher. And then it holds that for a while, and then it really needs a rest. It kind of goes down, and then those guys go a little higher, and then the immune system has to go up. And we get an immune system that is really chronically stuck up, a hyperreactive immune system, and finally it fails and goes back down. We talked about how to assess and heal that kind of an immune problem and how to get your immune dynamic and free. Now, today, let's say you've done all that and your immune system is perfectly regulating, your blood sugar is normalized, your pH is balanced. You probably don't even have to have this lecture so we can all go home. But anyway, since we're all here, I might as well mention a few small things. Now, when it comes to assessing blood sugar, assessing pH, there's little tests everybody can do, right? But I was trying to think of, now, what would be the home version of the nervous system test? How could people assess how their nervous system is functioning? I realize it's a little bit tougher to assess your hormones and assess your nervous system. And I came up with a couple of key things that that I listen for when people are talking to me that I look for. And then I realized that in popular culture, people have all these kind of funny sayings. Like I found out in French, one of the main complaints that people make, like when they're really disgusted with something or they really want an expletive, they'll say, "Oh, my liver." That's like a very common French saying. It's very interesting. But you can see where I'm going with this. Some people will say, "Oh, my nerves," like the old people, "Oh, my nerves." And that idea about the nerves being a little jangled or a little frayed or a little unbalanced. The visual image for this would be to be thinking about some woven thing, like a stocking, like one of the ladies' stockings, or a delicate garment that's been knit, or even those Berber carpets, where you pull a thread and it kind of just quickly unravels. And so that if you get an image inside of you of your nervous system being a little bit frayed at the edge, or worn like tattered, like an old pair of jeans, I find there's no chance that things outside match the things inside, is there? There's no chance of that. But still, we see people being all into all this frayed and tattered look. I don't know what it means. Now, in a sense, when your nervous system starts to get in trouble, the most important thing to understand is it starts to be like a missing key. Anybody ever lost their keys? You know what it feels like to misplace a wallet or a cell phone or misplace your keys? That feeling of desperation. That's the feeling of the nervous system starting to go awry. So if you check in, now that's your test. Do I feel like I'm missing my key somewhere inside of me? That would be a good test for you. Now, children are another good test of your immune system. How well do you do around children? If you need something a little more, less subtle, just get around some boisterous kids and see how well you hold up. Because when you're young, kids don't really bother you. As you start to get a little older, they really start to bother you. And everybody's known a cranky grandma or grandpa before. Maybe your own. Now, the thing about the children is that their nervous system is fully intact. They don't have much of an endocrine system yet, do they? I mean, they're not fully plugged into endocrine. But they've got such dynamic, they know how to rest well, they know how to run well and play well, they fall down and they get right back up, they know how to heal well, they know how to cry when it's time to cry, and then they stop crying and they move on. That's all the hallmarks of a very nice, healthy immune system, a nice nervous system. And they remember well what they're talking about. My entry into the nervous system started when I was very young. When I was very young, I probably came in, and we're going to talk about individual disturbances next time. I came in with a very disturbed nervous system. I had to, because everything in my life attracted nervous system assault. I attracted and had a very unpredictable and violent parent. So I'd be always kind of looking over my shoulder to see who was going to thunk me next. I attracted a lot of peer pressure with kids in the neighborhood and different things. I was a very early adopter of sugar. I remember that a pound a day of sugar would be about right for me. So I would put away at least a pound, and I liked the kind of sugar with red dye in it. So that red licorice was my favorite one. But it wasn't enough. So in the morning, I would get, I remember measuring it out. I was so proud of this. I would get a cup of white sugar and put it into about a cup of water and boil that up. And then I'd add the juice of half of a lemon, and that was my lemon syrup. Then I would make a stack of pancakes, like maybe 6, 8, or 10 pancakes tall, and I'd pour that cup of sugar over it. That would be breakfast. Then I'd go to school, then I'd eat my pound of red licorice, and then I'd come home, make another stack of pancakes, another cup of sugar. So that's kind of how I was living my early life. Now, by the time I was about 14 or so, I was down with my friend Bill at the local coffee shop, and we'd be staying up all night long and drinking cup after cup after cup of that non-Arabica bean, non-organic, cheap coffee. Playing with mercury. I just remember having a real fascination with it from the time I was in second or third grade. I'd always have some in my pocket. I found out you could coat pennies with it. It would stick to copper, so I'd always have some shiny, novel-looking mercury pennies to show people. And when I got out into the real wide world, I started to fall into the world of stimulants of the more aggressive kind. And the neurotoxic kind. So it was clear that something was wrong with me, but I didn't know there was anything wrong with me. I was just having a good time, and sex and drugs and rock and roll and all that hippie stuff. Now, my first car I bought was a '67 Firebird. Boy, I wish I had that now. Such a cool car. But this is very interesting about that car is the first night I got it, I went to turn on the headlights, and they didn't come on. I thought, oh, God, I got a problem with my car. It's brand new. What am I going to do? Luckily, I've got big feet, and my foot hit the bright switch. In those days, the bright switch was on the floor, and you'd pump it on and off. That would turn on the brights. They didn't have a thing on the column. And that switch was intermittent, so I could hold my foot against it, and the lights would come on. And that's no problem. Okay, so I'm just driving. That's fine. I didn't recognize the wiring of the car had any relationship at all to the wiring inside of my body or that it was trying to tell me anything. Anyways, I'm a good candidate for talking about nervous system healing and nervous system imbalance. Now, I found out that the nature of imbalance in the world is a lot like a washing machine cycle that's on spin-out. So I know you guys have all seen those washing machines spin out. And the interesting thing about them is that sometimes you can put something in there like a tennis shoe, and that can get like off to one side a little bit. As it's spinning, it starts a little bit of a wobble, and then you know what happens. It sucks everything in there over to that spot, and it starts to really, really, really thump. And so the nature of life is spinning. The earth is spinning, the atoms are spinning, and we're spinning, our chakras are spinning. And what that means is if anything gets a little bit out of round, if it gets a little bit of a wobble in it, then it's going to tend to try to suck everything in life over to that spot. That means what's attractive to you in entertainment choices and relationship choices and food choices are all going to be things that push you deeper into the imbalance that you're in. You become literally a self-betrayer by what seems attractive or good to you at that point in life. And so I remember just people saying to me, like, how it felt so good. How could it have been? Had there been anything wrong with that? But of course, you know that that there's a limit. And my first big breakdown happened. Didn't actually really happen. I had my pet died when I was 19. I just remembered this. I was playing racquetball, and the ball hit me right between the eyes, broke my glasses, gave me a big bruise there. I could and a bloody nose, and I couldn't see. So I was kind of driving home with no glasses like this, and I got home and found out my pet died. And it was a strychnine. It was a nervous system poison that took him down. And I had a little mini nervous breakdown in and around that. But my first, the first problem I really noticed was when I started to notice that the things that had originally given me pleasure weren't giving me the same amount of pleasure, and I was needing to go to greater and greater and greater lengths to just basically feel good about myself. And I realized that I couldn't go to sleep at night without sex. And I noticed that I needed just things to wind me up in the morning and things to wind me down at night. So I was in a real addiction profile. And I remember at one point I got to a peak, just embarrassed to admit it, but why not? I got to a peak of pleasure. I anticipated this pleasure so much that it actually like blew a fuse inside of me. I actually felt something pop, like a fuse right in the middle here. And I was, oh, this isn't good. That day I was wearing contact lenses. I sprayed my engine off with gunk, and I hit it with hot water, and the gunk in the hot water welded my contacts to my eyeballs. And that night I was on the radio. I was supposed to be on a radio program in Los Angeles. I was supposed to be telling people about healing. And I was so messed up from blowing the fuse and having my eyeballs burning out of the sockets. I couldn't get the contacts out. For a while there, that I couldn't even do a coherent, and I lost my radio career and contract all in one fell swoop. But I still didn't think anything was wrong. Now, there's a certain amount of momentum once that roller coaster is going down. You see what I'm saying? You know, it's not like you just stop it and turn it around. I remember, I don't remember who the bilker was, but there was some billionaire Texas money guy, Enron guy. Anybody remember his name?
And
was it?
Hunt? The guy named Hunt?
I don't remember. But that's not, it's not really all. Anyway, what I remember is that he had bilked a bunch of people out of investors out of billions of dollars. He took away seniors' retirement funds and little old ladies crossing the street and whatnot. His corporation was crashing and burning. He was lying to the Securities Exchange Commission, saying everything was fine. And at the same time, he was having these big parties on boats. And he got a haircut that cost him $5,000, and he had a band that cost him, you know, $50,000. I don't know who he got. And this was days before the total crash. And I remember listening on the radio in the Senate confirmation or the Senate investigation hearings. They were asking, "What were you thinking? You know, you Rome was burning, and you were fiddling to that tune." Of that giant extravagant party, and he said these words. He goes, "You know," and this was his defense. "When you get to my level in life, you don't just turn it on and off like a faucet, man." You see, he was stuck in that level. He couldn't turn it around, and that's kind of how the imbalance works. Because you know, when it's rattling like that, it's going to break the bearings. It's going to take the washing machine off of the foundation or whatever. You've got to stop it and redistribute the load. But we don't have a lot of tools for that. I think AA might be one of those tools. You see. Now, in the nervous system, you've got basically a wiring system, don't you? You think about it, but wires have power that goes through them. And so behind the nervous system, you've got a big power generator. And if you've looked at those like high tension lines that go overhead that people hate to live underneath with the giant insulators, think about your body as having some of those. Some power generators, some very high voltage, high tension lines with some huge insulators running around inside of you. How are your high tension lines feeling right now? You can check in, just check in and see. Also, now if you open the hood of your car and look underneath there, you can see a big fat cable about as big as your little finger. Low voltage is only 12 volts, but it carries about 625 amps of cold cranking power. Last time I checked my battery. Our body has that. It has some big fat wires. Where's the big fat wire in the body? One of them, the spine is an interesting one. We'll get to. I'm thinking the heart bundle branch, the thing that keeps the heart beating day and night. And the lungs have got one too. There's some thick conductors in the body that you have. Now think about this. What else do we have that might be an analog for the nervous system? You know, the wires have insulators, and so. That insulation, that plastic on the wires, that's another thing. If your wires don't have good insulation, they can short circuit, can't they? And so you have not only now do you have the wiring to think about, but you've got the insulation on the wires to think about in restoring the nervous system. And then lastly, is I want to talk about the nervous system as, think about it as kind of like a cell phone tower or a Wi-Fi signal that's sending wireless information. Did you know that your body is sending tons of wireless information? How does it do that? Well, it turns out like that between the skin and the muscles, there's a very shiny layer of tough stuff. It's called fascia, fascial tissue. That fascia tissue is one of the main information highways of the body. And it's strands, it's striated strands. Those strands run high-frequency signals through the body, high bandwidth communication pathways in the body that are very specific. And guess what those fascias correspond to in some ways? Anybody? To the meridian system, exactly. So when someone's sticking a needle through you and they're going, well, that goes to the gallbladder, well, it does. That's the fascia channel for the gallbladder that runs right under that whole meridian line. And there are additional ones that are secondary meridians, primary and secondary meridians, that there aren't a place that a needle can get to. So you think now my body's got a Wi-Fi system. Boy, I'd like to have broadband upgrade. Now, then we get to the control system. So thank God in my car, up until now, I've never had one of the car computer go out. Because that just your car's driving and it just stops, right? So none of us really wants to have anything wrong with the control system. What do you think the control system is in the body? No. 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 No.
Spine.
The spine is control system. This is amazing. This is very interesting. This took me years to accept. This was painful for me to accept. But I came to find out that if I was standing here and I talking to you and I reached back and touched a hot stove burner, that my body would go like this. And it would inhibit all these muscles. I couldn't touch that burner again in that second if I tried. It would balance me. My eyes would water. I'd be like one of those Mad Magazine cartoon guys. And all of that would happen purely out of the lower part of the spinal cord. The brain's never involved. In fact, the book that taught me about the spinal column intelligence was How to Get the Love You Want by Harville Hendricks. Just a groundbreaking, amazing book to read. And it basically said that falling in love, spinal column, and maybe like the little walnut, the little reptile brain on the brainstem. So all reproduction and sex and love on that level are coming from that lower spinal cord place. Now, this just didn't make sense to me because it was just a little mass of neurons. It's just wires, folks. What's going on here? Well, later on, I was in Maui, and I saw these little guys. I'm nearsighted, and I'm a microscope guy. I can see, like, I'd be a jeweler making little watches or something in a different life, because I can really see, right? And I saw the no-see-ums. There are these, like, little tiny ants are kind of the same color as the sand. They call them no-see-ums because you can't see them. And what they had done is they had found my backpack on top of the refrigerator, gotten in through the zipped zipper and into the Ziploc bag, and they were cleaning out my cookies. And then this thing came to me from the book of Proverbs. It said, study the ant, you sluggard. It labors all day without a boss. It stores up when there's plenty. I mean, it goes out there, finds food. It doesn't keep it for itself. It goes and gets its friends and shares, and it's so smart. And how big is its brain? I mean, it's only a few cells. I mean, it's so tiny, the brain of the ant, yet it's so smart. And so I started to realize, well, if that ant could be that smart with that small of a brain, how smart could my reptile be, you know, with all that spinal column and a whole walnut worth? And I started to realize that my life was being run and programmed out of that part. Because that was the part that drove me home at night when I couldn't remember how I got there and all that stuff. They found out that part of you identifies all people into 6 categories before you have a chance to even think about it. It's decided, is this someone to submit to, run away from, fight, nurture, be nurtured by, something like that. So it just categorizes them. You might meet somebody and they rub you the wrong way, and it's just that reptile brain that person reminds you on a very coarse, granular level of someone whose energy or vague physical mannerisms or appearance maybe abused you as a child. And now all of a sudden you're having this visceral, I've got to run away from this person or I've got to submit to them. When you let that part of your being run you, it's not always going to guide you very clearly. Now, it's important to understand the model of the neurological system and to try to understand which part of your system. Now, that knowledge was too powerful for me. As soon as I found out that I was being run by my spinal cord, I put the book down, couldn't read it again for about a year. It was too much for me. What I found from investigating this more is that part of our brain is a programmable unit. So it listens to the commands of the higher brain. And that's where self-talk comes in. And the thing is it needs very clear, simple commands. And it doesn't understand negatives. It reads everything as positive. So when you're telling a kid, don't run with scissors, all he hears is run with scissors. And that's, it's pretty weird. That's why reverse psychology works so well sometimes on them. This part filters all the stuff that goes in and out of the frontal cortex. The function of this brainstem thing, this reptile thing, is a lot like a neural net in a fuzzy logic kind of a way. And so what that means is let's imagine, for example, like a fishing net that's spread out over a big area. And it's just sitting there kind of flat and unperturbed. And that's a kind of a somewhat rough model of what this neural net's like. And let's say, for example, you're thinking about a baby being born. He didn't have any experiences yet, hasn't made any big mistakes, doesn't have any big wounds. You might think, well, the neural net's pretty flat to start with, right? He's a blank page, waiting to be written upon. And it's not true. By the time that baby is born, they're already like this. You see what I'm saying? If their mom was under stress, they're probably rolled up in a little ball, crumpled up like a piece of newspaper. So the neural net is coming out already kind of perturbed or kind of disturbed into peaks and valleys. Now, what do those valleys mean? What do they represent? Likely behavior. So what happens with our neural system is if there's some guy like the secret of the universe, one of the secrets of the universe things. Can I tell him? Yeah, I can tell him. There's secret of the universe. Just one of them is it's impossible for anything to happen. But if it happens, it will happen again. So here's the thing, is if you do a behavior, it becomes like little depression. And you do it'll be more likely for your electrons to all run down in there, and for you to do it again, it'll become more likely. You do it, and it'll become more likely. And this is what we call digging a pit, friends. Digging a pit. And so a good example of that is this guy was talking one time, and he was telling me about the donut shop. He had a thing for donuts, and he had given them up. But one day, it had been so long, he decided it'd be okay to cruise by the donut shop, which he was avoiding. And on the way by there, he was thinking, well, there's never a parking spot in front of the donut shop. So if there happens to be a parking spot in front of the donut shop, that could be a sign for me that it's okay for me to get a donut. Well, he says, sure enough, there was a parking spot on the right there on the donut shop. 8th time around the shop, it was right there.
I
Now, this is what, to stretch this to a spiritual dimension, this is what it means to try to be a follower of signs. Because we crave a sign. And really, all we're doing is fulfilling our own wishes and desires, finding what we're already looking for. And that's the danger of this neuronal net. It really gets so twisted. My friend Will, God bless him, he's a bad alcoholic, and I remember just one day he was telling me that he was walking into a bar, and it was a pack of cigarettes on the floor there, and it had a Camel on it, and his favorite brand of cigarettes were Camels, and so that pack of cigarettes meant that he could smoke Camel cigarettes. Or, you know, going to a fortune teller just to be told this thing, you can fall in love with this guy or whatever. Because when you want it and you're attached to the outcome, your neural net is just plunging. Okay, that's just, it's plunging. So what happens is with this neural net, is that the body has, I'm going to tell you a couple things about it that are important to understand. You want to heal and balance your neurology, you need to know these secrets. Okay, the first thing is the place we come from. The place we come from is unity and singularity. Where we come from, there's only one. Okay? But the place that we've come to, the place that we're in here, is duality. We have the experience up there of the one they say there's of whom there's no shadow of turning, a light that never shifts or fades. But down here we have day and night. Hot and cold. We have male and female. Up there we have the no giving and taking in marriage. There isn't the duality up there to even do it with. So we come down here into this space, and guess what we think? Down here. Well, we think it's singularity, because it was all singularity where we came from. So we get down here, and we're having the experience of singularity, trying to have the experience of singularity down here. And what that means is we polarize. So we'll become a Republican or a Democrat. You see what I'm saying? A chauvinist or a feminist. You know, a Ford or a Chevy. We'll just, you know, that's the whole experience, is I've got to be about this one thing. And they say this, that alcohol, which is one of the main nervous system poisoners, creates this black and white binary thinking. Now, we talk about the changes in the world. The world changes, world shift. I remember one of the key things that somebody said about the world shift that I love, it's made so much sense to me, is it was from one of the astronauts. He was on the moon, and there's no atmosphere on the moon. They're in a vacuum. So guess what it looks like up there? All the edges are very sharp. It's black and white. There's no air and dust and things to make things fuzzy. So he said it was actually crazy making to have everything be so sharp. Nothing's worn down. Everything is so sharp. All the lines are so sharp. He said it reached inside of you and you couldn't rest. And that's part of what I think is happening in this world shift, is this energy where everything's turning so sharp, polarizing so hard. And yet, you know, it's like this wisdom that says we've got to go beyond the neural net. We've got to go beyond being in a pit somewhere. That it says wide is the way that leads to destruction, but narrow is the way that leads to life. So we've got to find some kind of a narrow place that goes down the middle. Now, when I was a young man, I remember riding a dirt bike for the first time. I bought it for $400, and I got on it. It was a Suzuki RM250, a big crusher, like a heavy thing, you know, and I didn't know what I was doing. It was pretty squirrely. It was dangerous and scary, and I'm riding down this dirt path. I just remember looking, and there was a tree here and a tree here, and it was like, oh, God, I'm going to die, because the gap was really narrow. It was like a few inches on each side, and somehow something inside of me took over, like an angel took over, and guess what I did? I stared right down the middle. I didn't look at either tree, because if I would have looked at either one, I would have hit it. And that's where this focus is, you know, that you can't afford in this life to look to the duality, but you've got to be in the experience of it, but you've got to kind of look right down the middle of it somehow. The poet Rumi said, famously, be with those that mix with God, like milk mixes with honey. and say whatever comes and goes, rises and sets, I do not love. Or else you'll be left like the dying embers to flare themselves out behind the departing caravan. Now, here's what happens when you're in the pit, is you're just bouncing around in there. Okay? And how many people are being used up day and night in oscillation back and forth between single and together, single and together, single and together. Or like one of my favorite ones is fat and thin. Right? So when you are, let's say, thin, you might be looking around at everybody eating the fat. And they got the ice cream and the big desserts, and you're going, oh my God, they're eating all that, and they look happy, you know? And I'm miserable or whatever. And so then you might convince yourself, okay, I'm going to eat the fat. So I start to eat the fat, eat the fat. Now so I lose my shape. And then all of a sudden I'm miserable again, saying, oh, God, if only I was thin, then I would be happy. And you see it just go back and forth, back and forth. So this is the kind of thing that the experience of duality, the reason duality is bad to be unconscious in, is because our life gets used up oscillating around in the bottom of a pit. My wife has this thing. She says one of her stories about life that she heard from somebody else's, and I'm sure you've heard it all, but it's worth saying for the record here, the story of my life. I walked out the door. I didn't see the pit. I fell in it. Took a really long time to get out. Next day. Walked out the door. I didn't see the pit. I fell in it. I got out real quick. Next day. Walked out the door. I saw the pit. I fell in it anyway. Got out of it really quick. You know? Next day, walked out the door, saw the pit, went around it, fell in the next pit. Okay. But we have duality, and so falling in a pit isn't the only thing that can happen to us. The neuronal net. In duality, the wisdom book says, if anyone follows his own way, follows his reptile, brain, he'll either fall in a pit or wander into a bush and be bitten by a serpent. So that's the other side of what can happen when you're following the neuronal net, is that you can end up getting something with a forked tongue come in and put some poison in you. It's important to know what happens to the neuronal net, because here I am, I'm being attracted to sugar, a neurotoxin, I'm being attracted to tobacco, I was smoking. And I didn't just smoke any cigarettes. I smoked filterless Shermans, the long, dark ones. I was like 15. I'm smoking these big, long, kind of Turkish oval stogie things. It was just going from there. So, I was not being attracted to faith, peace, trust, any of those things. Now, the interesting thing is when you destroy your nerves, you really get a lot of connection with the beyond. Because you don't have your army anymore. It ain't working for you, so you need your higher connection. So through all of that nerve destruction that we do, we actually end up getting a level of archetypal and esoteric sometimes, and metaphysical knowledge becomes much more available to you. So it's not necessarily good or bad, it just is. You got to look at the imbalance, decide how it's working for you, and decide when it's going to be, you've gone too far, higher, and having all that stuff sucked over to that side. Now, the next book I read after the How to Get the Love You Want book that was really, really hard for me was a book that was called The Path of Least Resistance. I don't know if you guys have read that book, but man, that's a whap in the face with a cold fish. It's just horrible. Basically, what it explains is the dominant paradigm of the reptile neurology. You know what it is? It's point A to point B, following the path of least resistance. And what they don't tell you is it's following the greatest appetite. See, if someone's choking me, I don't really care about my next bottle of beer, right? But if I can breathe, I might be a little thirsty. Okay, now I've got my bottle of beer, well, I might want some chips to go with that. something that's kind of salty and fatty. And just so on. It goes on up. That's Maslow's hierarchy, isn't it? Now, in the singularity, there is no limit to anything. In the duality, what we came down here to incarnate into and experience, everything is limitation. There's never enough of anything. If you don't believe that, look at 9/10 of the world that's bearing our prosperity on their backs in a lot of ways. Let me just say it. See? And so what happens is whoever is the most ruthless and the hungriest will end up getting the most power and getting everything they want. And then they call them enlightenment. Now, that's an old system. When everything was chaos and tribal, some guys had to become chieftains and lead to the top, and they would sit in a tent and everybody'd slave, and then they'd drop little pieces of wisdom on them, and then they'd defeat them and stuff like that. And that system doesn't work anymore. The reason why is that was an old system. There's a new system, a system where basically deny yourself, deny your appetites and your hungers, and go after helping each other unselfishly. That's what it's all about. And that is the path to restoring the nervous system in a lot of ways. When you do good for somebody else, you do it for yourself in the deepest part of you that doesn't know the difference between you and anybody else. That you can only do by helping somebody else. I love this, the latest book. Heard about it on Terry Gross. It's on there right now. It's called Pleasure. It's a book
of The Compass of Pleasure.
Yeah. How our brains make fatty foods, orgasm, exercise, marijuana, generosity, vodka, learning, and gambling feel so good.
That was the name of the book?
The book is called
The Compass of Pleasure.
The Compass of Pleasure. Terry Gross, just go online and find it. I didn't listen to it, but it's got to be fascinating with like an author with that title. I love it. So in this path of least resistance, it's describing the process, point A to point B in the path of least resistance, only as a side thing, because it's really talking about the creative process and how to overcome this base process. The base process is, I wake up, I'm hungry, I go to the refrigerator because that's the closest food. If there's a couch in the way, I'll usually walk around the couch instead of climb over it. I go to the building, you know, if there's nothing in the food, I'll go in the door instead of let myself down from the roof and stuff like that. I'm just following point A to point B. And how much consciousness is in that? There's none, really. There's no consciousness. I'm just following my appetite, point A to point B, path of least resistance. But what it's saying is there's another process in the world. And that is the creative process. And what they were saying was, is that the creative process is a process that changes the structure so that our path of least resistance flows us into a different place. There's a creative process inside of us, a manifestation principle inside of us that actually changes the underlying structure of the universe so that our unconscious path will flow right into it. And it's the same art that's practiced by anybody that's from ballet to theater to poets to fine artists to musicians. They all, artists, follow the same creative path. So if you think about your creative process, you'll realize that's that actually your creative process changes the universe. Now, here's the interesting thing, vis-a-vis the neural net. Are you going to change the universe so that you get more of what you want and everybody else gets screwed a little bit more? That's a deeper question. Or are you going to use your creative power to create a world where other people get served? Maybe the neediest of them all. Now, these are interesting philosophical questions that come to me out of my damaged neurology and my desire to heal and balance it. The idea is that we've got to get, to heal this thing is almost like a stack of blocks. Have you ever seen this game, what do you call it, where all the blocks are stacked and you got to poke one block out at a time until finally the whole tower falls?
Well, Jenga,
yeah. Yeah, that game. See, now, imagine that our, you know, chakras, think about them as bricks or blocks stacked one on the other, and one of them's a little out, the other's a little out, the other's a little bit out, and you push one, it's going to affect the other one, it's going to affect the other one. And that's how our balancing act works, is we're always in one of our centers, and we're always trying to satisfy that thing, or that thing, or that thing, and then that's just perturbing the whole system. You can never, ever line yourself up that way, no matter how bright or brilliant you are. But if you had a string that connected all those blocks, and you picked that set of blocks up, just gravity pulling it down and the string picking it up, the whole thing would line up, right? And guess what happens when those blocks get set back down? What's that? No. They're perfectly stacked on top of each other, perfectly aligned, right? So how much energy am I spending sitting up here with my blocks all stacked? None. There's no energy. You see? Get everything lined up and everything becomes effortless. And the way to do it is to have that marionette string pulling you right from here. Literally, you becoming the puppet or the servant of the divine. Now I'm in an effortless surrender, and I go do this, and we engage serendipity, and we stop our land-based paradigm of point A to point B in the path of least resistance, and our new paradigm is like Neil Diamond saying Jesus was a sailor. So we go out on the water, and if you've ever watched a yacht race, which I'm not a big TV watcher or something, but there's something about those yacht races, if you watch them for a second, is they are at a fevered pitch of consciousness. You know why? They have to catch every ounce of wind. Now, they've let go of, in a way, anything except how to catch every ounce of wind and where they came from and where they're going to. But in the meantime, they're tacking back and forth serendipitously. This is the process described in the book of change, the I Ching, where it talks about when I let go of my immediate goal and my lower nature path from point A to point B, and I allow the thing that comes from like you don't know where and it goes to you don't know where, that breath, you let it carry you off course. Now all of a sudden you meet the exact right person in the exact right place in the exact right moment, and boom, lightning strikes for you. So this is the kind of thing we're talking about. Lynn Horowitz did a beautiful model of this. He was talking about a way to try to heal children, and so he had to have this sort of simple process. And he basically talked about cause and effect. He talked, and this is what I didn't have, no cause and effect growing up. He talked about basically you do an action out of some desire, you reap a consequence, the consequence makes you feel good or feel bad, and then that feeds back up to your next choice. That's the whole model. Now here's the interesting thing that he didn't talk about, is there's short-term and long-term. Right? And that's the differentiation. The lower, like the reptile part, is always going to lead you in a way to want to do the thing that makes you feel good now. Feel good now. Feel good now. But then the long-term repercussion, I remember I was such a hedonist at the Renaissance Fair, and I just remember this couple walking around. They were really fat, and their teeth were rotting out of their head. It was very Renaissance-y, and we were walking through puddles, and we didn't care and stuff, and I just loved that. It was in the straw all over the ground and whatnot. But I thought back, now, that must have really hurt. When their teeth finally all rotted, they must have had them all pulled, and then they couldn't bite very well. So there's this thing with where there's temporary pain, but there's long-term gain. That's coming from the higher perspective place. And in the model, they have this thing with the military, where they have the army, the sergeant, and the general. And this comes out of the I Ching, this model, that our being is comprised of many members, and the many members like the army that gets the job done. But you can't put the army in charge of things. What if you put the army in charge? They would never go to bats of the war. They'd say, we're not going in there or whatever. And there's things to win here. There's prizes to win. We are surrounded by good. Did you know that? Everything around us is good. And guess what's just past the good? Great. Yeah, better. You have to reach past what's good, perfectly good. Perfectly good is the enemy of the great. And so it all comes down to perspective, like the samurai movie, where the generals are up there on the hills, you know, and I don't watch TV, but every once in a while we talk on the phone at somebody's house, and I'll see this thing, and there's no sound. The generals, and the one general, he sends his army straight in, and those guys go march, and then they fall into the trap of the other general, the evil general. And he's going, aha, I've got you. And he runs his men all around and surround him, and he's killing them all. And those guys were just a feint. They were like suicide guys. Okay? And then as soon as the general goes in to feast on him, then this guy brings his armies in, attacks them from the flanks, and kills them, the smart general. So there's all this idea that in a way that when we get that higher brain and the higher guidance, the higher self and all of that going, that something great can get won for the life, what we really came here to do, the real purpose, instead of just go from one pit to falling into another, to another, to another. So real healing comes when we engage our sergeant and engage our general. Now, the general is the endocrine system. The general is the endocrine system. The highest organization and intelligence in the body is the glands. The glands are the last physical body. And above the glands, guess what? The first non-physical body. The first immaterial body. Guess what the first immaterial body is? Emotional body. Feelings, right? Can't see them, but you've got them. So when you want to balance your endocrine system, guess what you got to balance?
Emotions.
Your emotional body, yeah. So if you get your emotional body balanced, you get your endocrine system balanced automatically. When you get your endocrine system balanced, your endocrine system organizes your nervous system and heals your nervous system automatically. But it's got to be feel-good long-term versus feel-good short-term. Now, the feel-good short-term in the nervous system is dopamine. That's why they call it dope. No. And so the long-term reward chemistry is serotonin. We need both. We need dopamine and we need serotonin. Don't get me wrong. But when you've plowed the field and you've driven off the animals and you've gotten the seed in and prayed for rain and hauled the water and pulled the weeds, and when you've, sowed the wheat and I think that's how you say it, and you've thrashed it, pulled the heads off and you've pounded it into flour and you made that loaf of bread, that bread is going to give you a lot of reward. Everything in life is how much you get out of it is how much you put into it. Isn't it? And in the end, the love you make is equal to love. The love you take is equal to love you make. So that's how I got all that pleasure that blew my circuits, by the way. I put so damn much energy into that relationship that I was expecting such a huge payoff. And it just killed me, overloaded me. But anyway, what I'm saying is energy in equals energy out. And so the long-term reward chemistry of you put all this energy in, you stuck with this person through thick and thin, it's been 25, 30, 40 years, and now the sex is starting to really get good. And the serotonin is just pumping.
So you said serotonin was the long-term and dopamine was the short-term?
Short-term, yes, exactly.
Okay.
And so neurochemistry, we've got to look at the serotonin pathway as what's going to be ultimately really healing and revealing and rewarding. And the dopamine pathway is what's going to like kind of get us through in a quick pinch. Now, with this guy that wrote the book, the one about the vodka and the learning and the
compass
book. This guy wrote the compass book. He says he has nothing wrong with going to a prostitute here and there or having an affair. He goes, what's really wrong is if you can't go to sleep at night if you don't do that. So he's talking about, on a different level, about how you get where addiction becomes the real problem. But that's how it is that we get into one end of the imbalance or the other where we just can't rest or sleep unless we do something that's self-destructive. I got to dissipate or I can't rest. We've been sowing the wrong seeds. Our field is full of weeds. Life is only sowing and reaping, sowing and reaping. When we want the serotonin, we got to ask, what do I need to sow differently? What different thing do I need to sow? We've got to be gardeners instead of hunters in this. The universe follows the law of gradual increase. That's the law. It isn't give me a win the lottery and I'll be happy. Studies showed that paraplegics and lottery winners, at the end of 10 years, were equally happy. Right? Unearned income is one of the hardest karmic lessons on the planet right here. Right? So it's the law of gradual increase. And there's a deeper law. And it's the law of sevens. 6 years shall you plant the field, and reap the harvest, the increase thereof, and the seventh year you should rest. And if you say, how should I rest on the seventh year? What will I eat? Then I'll tell you. I will make your crop so abundant in the sixth year that you'll have enough for 3 years. So we've got to commit ourselves to an ideology of rest. Rest is what's going to heal our emotions, our nervous system, our endocrine system. Rest is the thing that we are all really longing for on a deep level. And we've got to start sowing seeds of rest, sowing seeds of rest. So what does that look like in your life? I can't tell you. Look at what's disturbing you. I had this beautiful garden. I was so into the brassicas in the garden. I was so into the collards, the kale, the broccoli, the cabbages, the Brussels sprouts. I had that whole family. And yet there was these moths, these little white cabbage moths were coming in, and they kept fluttering and stuff. And then they were laying eggs, and little green worms were eating it, which didn't bother me so much, you know, because there's more protein or primal diet or something. But I gave it to my children. I was so proud of my garden and my guests, and it had worms in it. I didn't like it. So I started to say, and they're eating it all. They're eating me out of house and home, and I'm hungrier than they are. I'm bigger. And so I'm embarrassed to admit that this is a truth telling. I went to the dollar store and got a badminton racket. And you know those little suckers are hard to swat? I'd be out there, and you know what? My blood pressure would go up like 50 points. I'd be chasing them all over the yard like a madman. I'd think my neighbor is going to think I'm crazy. And then one day I really felt the divine say to me, I want you to rest. This is a year of rest. I want you to give this January to rest, this first month. I want you to give the first day of each week to rest. So it happened to be a first day. So I said, okay, I'm going to rest. So I was sitting down, pretty tense. And you can imagine, I was looking at my garden and enjoying it, and there were little white bugs fluttering all over it. So I was going for the badminton, but the voice was telling me, today's your day of rest. There's no swatting those bugs or running around the yard like a madman on this day. And I said, you're crazy. Are you kidding me? And the voice came back, no, today's your day of rest. So I said, okay, Marionette, okay. Let him eat the garden. I don't care. It's your garden. Well, guess what happened? The next morning, Monday morning, I get to go get them. I didn't care anymore. And then they went away. Yeah. And I discovered BT worm killer. Okay. Now, yeah, don't worry about it anymore. I just put all that stuff on you. See, there's inspiration comes. Solutions arise. Life gets better and easier. It's that thing of we're trying to lose, how do I stop controlling? That's how you do it. You just stop. I remember I was shivering one time. My dad, I was coughing. And I was hiccuping, and I couldn't stop hiccuping. And my dad said, well, just stop. And I'm like, yeah, but how? He goes, well, just like you would stop shivering, or like you'd stop coughing, you just stop. So I tried it, and yeah, it works. You just stop. It's not as easy. It's simple, but it's not as easy. Now, in this thing, in this path of least resistance thing, the creative process, I've got to warn you, the manifestation principle and process is manifestation of Maya. It's manifestation of more immateria. It's more and more of nothing. What if you gain the whole world? You see what I'm saying? So what happens is that the limitation is our dearest gift. It's that one really cool town where all the hipsters are that brings everybody together. You know, it's when you need that cup of flour or sugar, you go to your neighbors to ask them for it. The one good coffee shop, you go down there and congregate. So the limitation is what brings you together. The limitation is what raises up what's noble and free inside of you. So you go down to Mexico, and there's a guy there, and he says, I have 5 beans. Here, you have 3. He's free. Right? The person who's, I got this yacht and this thing, and then it's all mine. You can't have any of that. That person is not free. They're slaves owned by what they think they own. So what I'm saying is that possession and increase is a trap. The deal is to get rid of the stuff and get free. That's the deal. And freedom means that you're non-attached to it. I can let go of that. I can be content in plenty. I can be content in little. I've learned to become all things to all people. This is the guidance of the Spirit. So the net thing is when all your blocks get stacked up, you stop desiring the Maya. You stop trying to manifest it. You stop trying to get more of it. And you start to find the ecstasy that lives in the ordinary. And it's the simple thing that gives you all the joy in the universe. These are hard lessons. This is tough stuff. But it heals. This is what healing looks like. When you walk through the door of healing, this is what it looks like. You're going for this, not that. If I make this confession, I trust God is going to meet all my needs. I trust that God loves me, He's going to meet all my needs and supply me richly and abundantly. And I walk out the door affirming that with my whole being. Guess what's going to happen next? Does anybody know what's going to happen next? Every visible sign of support is going to dry up and disappear. Because my faith has to be tested in that statement. As when I'm in that statement, when I have nothing left, right? And then I still say, oh, God's going to supply all my needs. When I have the hopelessness and the hope side by side and experience the duality that's the true creative process, that's when it all then does come back around. But we have to walk in it for a little while. We have to follow the law of gradual increase. And healing oftentimes doesn't just strike like lightning. It really is that I walk through that door not knowing what's on the other side of it. I'm going to have some tests. I'm going to have some hoops to jump through. But I know that I'm going to be whole on the other side of it. I'm going to get my whole brain back. My heart is rent into this love and that love and that love and every kind of brokenness. But when I give that my heart up, I know it's going to pan back down to me whole. My nervous system is going to be restored and made whole. How do I restore this thing? A lot of it means I need to memorize. Because our mind gets stuck in little twisty mazes all alike. And if it's not that, little twisty maze is all different. In the most ancient cultures, the mind was death. And so your mind is 50% of your experience is the stories you're telling yourself. When I was 19, I left Los Angeles area and I shook the dust off of my clothes and said, this place has nothing for me and I'm never going back there. And I moved to Santa Cruz. I was there 28 years, working in Maui and Ashland and Boulder. I had a good circuit. And then I got called back to Los Angeles. And my wife, too, she said, I'll move anywhere with you except Japan or Los Angeles. We both had lived in Japan, and it's a hard place. And she said, anywhere but Japan or Los Angeles, so we end up in Los Angeles. But I ended up in my old childhood home. And the first night I was there, my son had a dream. He said, in my dream, there was giants in the hills, and they were throwing boulders down on us, and they were going to crush us, and we were running like crazy. And the giants was my memories of my childhood, where I was defeated on every side and decided I was a loser. And I had to go back and stand on the corner where I was beat up and tell myself, my old self, because time doesn't matter. You're going to be okay. You're going to do this. It won't matter. It's just another learning experience. And so what I'm saying is we need to reinvent our lives from this new perspective, completely, down to the last ounce of everything. When we reinvent our lives completely, the healing really turns on. Now, I'm running out of time here, but I've got enough. I'm only maybe two-thirds of the way. Let me turn on the fire and heat it up really fast. If you want to repair your emotional system, your emotional body, don't follow it. Don't follow your emotions. They don't have perspective. You see, you could eat a bad piece of pizza and feel really bad, but don't be guided by that. When you meet somebody, you could feel very insecure about yourself or think, oh man, that came off really wrong. But you might just be picking up what they were thinking. Their vibe. It had nothing to do with you. So what if you're going to follow if you don't follow your feelings? You need to be alive to your emotional body. You need to know when your emotional body is disturbed and when it's not. Okay? But you've got to follow a mind that's fixed on something higher. In the I Ching, it calls the something higher the sage. The active principle of the universe is leading and guiding you into higher and higher and higher change and enlightenment. And I had to do the I Ching for years. The special one I used called A Guide to the I Ching by Sarah Anthony that was particularly amazing for me. And it ended up leading me back to a lot of truth. And I remember that I had that journal and the coins and the little cute purse and the book. And I was going to write all about all of the wisdom I'd gotten out of there. And I had done all this thing. And then my dad was dying in the hospital. I went to visit him. And this is true. In San Diego at 6 o'clock in the morning, 5:30 or something, I went in to hold his hand for a few minutes. And I came out like 15 minutes later. Somebody had stolen my journal and my I Ching and my coins. And then suddenly I realized, like, I'm done with that. I'm free of it. I don't need that anymore. All the wisdom that it was giving me, all the points on the wheel and stuff like that, I just need to ask, where am I? And I can get that directly. But for a while there, I couldn't. I needed to nail my ego, not crucify it or kill it. You need your sergeant. Your sergeant is what's going to bring discipline to your army. If you don't have a sergeant, your army's going to just run amok. So you need your ego, but your ego has to listen to the general. It has to get the higher perspective place. But some kind of a system, a dowsing system, is very, very, very helpful. Fasting. I just read this thing in the Mercola site. Love Joseph Mercola. Go to Mercola.com if you're not already on there. He was talking about, oh, this is my big secret. Now it's been around for a million years, 1,000 years or something. But his new big secret is how to activate brain-derived neuronal growth factor. How would you like some of that? Right. How would you like some brain-derived neuronal growth factor? I'd like it like that. Okay, here's how you do it. He said, now don't do this unless if you're going to mess it up. So go read his article. You fast for a certain period of time, so you take all the calories out of your system. Now this is my Bhutanese priest. That I was listening to that Tibetan priest guy's going to come listen to them. Those guys are so smart. They're so amazing. They might lead you down their path, which might not be your path. So you have to understand whether what they're telling you is going to be a sidetrack for you or if it's on your main road. So be aware of that. The Dalai Lama said, after he went to be with the Christian monks in the Living Buddha, Living Christ, now, and he said, I don't say Christians should become Buddhist or Buddhists should become Christians. But man, when they reach the pinnacle, they're in the same place. So we've got our path up the mountain. So we've got to figure out what is our path up the mountain. Well, at this point, this Bhutanese priest, he was my priest. He's gone back to Bhutan now. But he told me, he said, eat less food. Please, eat less food. It was the hardest thing for me. Eat less food. I said, why? He said, well, look at me. I stand like an oak tree. He didn't really say it, but he did. I mean, you couldn't knock him over the truck. And he said, I eat this one apple. And I work all day. His chi was so big, you know. He said, ha, I defeat the demon of grain. Ha! You know, because that insistent voice that said, you got to eat me, you got to eat me, you got to eat me. You know, that loud thing versus that little quiet thing. And so he was telling me that the more food you eat, the more sleep you need. So are you tired? Just eat less. You'll become less tired. Mm-hmm. If anybody's ever gone on a fast, you realize the second, third day, it's amazing. You feel like, I don't even need food. I would never eat again. There's other food in the universe. Other food. And so so this fasting thing renews the nervous system. Your body eats itself. And it eats the fat, wealthy cells? No, it eats the old, dead, tired ones in the tenements that were run down, ready to go anyway. But just now the energy to do it because there's so much coming in. Our bodies are designed for feast or famine. There's times of lean. And there's times of plenty, but the times of plenty usually last historically than the times of lean. So you get in this fast, all of a sudden you get really strong. He says, I work all day on people. I never get tired. And he was doing major healing on people. He never got tired. And then he told me that the less you eat, the less absorptive you are. The less you eat, the less sensitive and absorptive you are to other energies. So when you eat, you get into the mix and the morphogenic field is beating up on you and everybody's thoughts and you walk into a place and you go, I don't want to be here. And it's not you, it's them. They don't want to be there. And you're susceptible to it all of a sudden because you can't hear your guides because all this food was coming in. And so eat less food is what he was telling me. Just eat less food. So Joseph Merkel now, he's come along the secret to brain-derived neuronal growth factor. Go on a fast. He didn't say how much or how long exactly. And then he said, and then exercise in bursty exercise. Now, do you think in the history of human existence, people have needed to do a little bit of bursty work from time to time?
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? And you think they might have had to do that when there wasn't a lot in their stomach? Mm-hmm. Now they're getting the nitrous oxide, they're getting the human growth hormone, they're getting the brain-derived neuronal growth factors, they're getting the vascular growth factors, all of that. The cardiolipin, the energy factors, they're all coming alive inside of them. So he says, just fast and exercise. But here's your secret. You've got to put protein in with 30 minutes later. And not just any protein. He wants you to have a very good pre-digestive branched chain amino acid or very good protein. Because that protein goes straight into building muscle, building nerve, building liver, detox function, and all that. And if you want to really amp this up, take B vitamins and coffee and on an empty stomach and then exercise. Now, he doesn't even dare say that. That's my secret. I mean, you do this. If you exercise on B vitamins and coffee on an empty stomach and then feed yourself with some great aminos, and fatty acids. My secret is I don't just have the aminos. I put the fats with it. I put the minerals with it, and I put the greens with it. So now in my blender, I've got a bunch of protein powder and yogurt and seeds and nuts that have been soaked and an avocado and some coconut and some pinch of salt and some citrus for the acid to help digest the minerals and a whole food context and a lot of those green leaves that the cabbage moss leave alone. You see what I'm saying? And then that's the secret. Then you're fueled.
So that's the protein that you're referencing to.
He's saying buy his whey protein.
Yeah, like
I'm not against it, but I'm saying I'd like five proteins or six more proteins in the same drink.
Okay.
So you have an amino acid smorgasbord from multiple protein sources. Your body will have a feast.
Give an example.
I love soaked pumpkin seeds, sunflower seeds, and almonds. It's like one of my favorite. That's three proteins right there.
All soaked, right?
All soaked and throw away the water.
What are two more good ones to go with it?
Oh, my gosh.
Bee pollen.
Yeah, bee pollen's a fabulous one. Pollens are great for a lot of people. Now, bee pollen's very buzzy. So a lot of people don't need to be that buzzy, right? They're trying to calm down. So bee pollen will not help you to be calm. Bee pollen will not help you to be calm. But I love protein powders. I like rice protein a lot. I do pretty well avoiding soy protein, but some people, they do okay with soy protein powder. I'm a type A. Type A should avoid and be very careful with dairy. Because I'm a type A and I should be very careful and avoid dairy, of course I have a lot of mom problems, and I'm always going for the cheese and the yogurt and all that stuff. Now, as soon as I quit the dairy, the mom problems have kind of cleared and diminished a little bit. The wheat is the father problems. The grains. And so that's the brain chemistry of the dopamine, where the dairy is the... now, how does this work? They are the casomorphines, the addictive milk neurochemistry, and the wheat is the glutamorphines, the addictive father neurochemistry. So you've got to clear out the grains and the dairy in order to really get clear and not be a pube. Okay.
What's a pube?
A pube. That's what somebody told me I was the other day, because I was going, well, I'm like this because my mom's like that. And she goes, what are you, a pube? And I was like, I guess I must be. Stop drinking some milk. Okay. So exercising, nourishing, and fasting, these are powerful neurological rebuilders. And I ate some duck eggs the other day from the farmer's market, and I felt like they healed me. Duck eggs were amazing.
Fabulous.
For me. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I just, boy, I love them. So, and the ducks didn't die or suffer or anything like that. The wiring has insulation, so you've got to heal the insulation, and the healing of the insulation is lecithin. You need to have inositol and choline in that drink. If you want to support your nerves, put the inositol and choline in that drink. make sure that you're getting enough magnesium and calcium. Magnesium and calcium, very calming for the body and the nerves, and very supportive of the nerve rebuilding side of the body. Now, a lot of people are against calcium these days. They don't understand calcium. I'll have a powerful conversation about the role and value of calcium in the human body. Calcium is one of the body's most prized minerals in esoteric mineralogy. Calcium is the knitter. Remember I was talking about the nerves get frayed? It's like a piece of cloth coming unknit. I saw my dad die. I was in the spirit. I saw my dad die, and it was this piece of cloth, and it was starting to unravel, and I was trying to hold it together, and I couldn't, and I just saw it unravel. And calcium is a knitter. It's the thing that brings all that, knits those things back together. In the Myers cocktail, which is one of the famous naturopathic formulas, intravenous calcium, because it's so hard to absorb. I've sat on a chair and had calcium pumped right in my veins. Oh, it's amazing.
What source do you recommend?
For calcium, I like this product called CalComp. Roger can order it. It's a vegan calcium that's got five different sources. And because it's got five different sources, no matter what channel you need, it can come in. Because our body fatigues on its calcium absorption channels, and it's got the little bit of hydrochloric acid for the absorption and a lot of herbs, and it's got thyroid factors that come from vegetable sources. You can't beat it. So, and I chew them and hold them in my mouth, and they heal your teeth and all kinds of stuff, in my opinion, my experience.
So,
silica.
You won't plug your heart out.
Silica, horsetail, it's in there, but yeah. No, the whole thing about calcium... and the deposits is it's, first of all, it's free radical damage, so the veins need to seal themselves, so they need some mortar because they're leaking. So it puts on inflammation and it puts on plaquing. And so that whole arterial deposits, all you need is a good... Hold, where's that product?
Right,
I'm going to get in trouble, but it's the one... All you need is a good arginine product and a good vascular product, and you can get a Roto-Rooter natural on your plumbing and piping and the barnacles... Those deposits that you blame calcium for, because your kidneys are weak and the kidneys drive the calcium against the concentration gradient. What happens is, think about Fort Knox. And they say, oh, I'm sorry, I took that gold. I need to put it back. Well, you just don't drive gold bars right into Fort Knox. And you certainly don't take currency in there. I mean, there's some guards at the gate. They want to know who you are and what you want and stuff. Now, in nature, like repels like. So calcium repels calcium. So to try to get calcium into the bones, there's so much calcium that's concentrated there, you can't get any more in there. Unless you have very strong kidneys, they do molecular chemistry to drive calcium into the bones against the concentration gradient. When your kidneys get weak, the calcium gets stuck. You need fatty acids. The calcium can't get out of the blood correctly without vitamin D and fatty acids. So all those deposits are coming from all kinds of different... You need magnesium. You need... all these different things to make the calcium work right. When it does get deposited, it gets deposited, and guess what? Soft calcium forms. It's softer than an eggshell. Your body can go in and dissolve teeth with its and dissolve bones easily with its immune system. It can dissolve soft calcium formations easily. Okay, it just needs to have the desire. Now, I remember one time when I was living off the gold. I was a young man. I was 20 years old. I was doing dishonest stuff. I thought corporations were bad. It was okay to take from them. And as a result of that, I was hurting myself. Didn't know it. But I remember having wads of money in my pockets so big they irritated me. They irritated me. Now, when your body is robbing the bones, it's got so much chemistry of calcium at such a toxic alkalinity that it does start looking for places to squirrel it. I was looking for places to put that money. Okay, so when you're getting those buildups, it's a good sign your body's tapped into the bone and calf, and you're in danger. And you're running down that side, the parasympathetic slope that's a slippery slope. But I know calcium's very important for knitting and very important for nervous system healing. And a lot of people that want a good calcium can take eggshells, organic eggshells, and mix them with vinegar and lemon juice or grapefruit juice or lime juice or all of that and dissolve them. And then drink that calcium that comes from, I'm talking about real chickens, not fake ones. And they had to eat real bugs and real food in order to have real eggs. And flower essences, lovely, lovely, lovely emotional healing layer. And a lot of nerves are in the gut. More nerves are in the gut than in the brain, I think. And the gut is, you know, we covered this already, but the gut is the soil of the body. You know, a tree sticks their roots down in the ground, and they have their soil right there. Now, our body carries its soil around with it. And our nervous system, it puts its little tentacles out into what we eat, and that's the soil of our body. And if you have mercury or alcohol or pesticides or, you know, rich foods, all kinds of things that can really destroy and damage carbohydrates that are refined and whatnot, really, really destroy and damage the roots of our body, which are trying to reach down to that soil. So you've got to heal the gut if you want to have a healthy and healed nervous system. Fasting helps that. The liquid diets really help that. It's super important to do that. You really can heal it all. But do it in this order, okay? Go in and figure out where you are in the arc. Are you a cleanser or a builder? Okay, if you're a cleanser, that means if you're young, like 20-something, and you feel ripped and healthy and stuff like that, and you eat salads and green drinks and they make you feel amazing, you're a cleanser. So if you're a cleanser, just start cleansing like crazy right away and start alkalizing like crazy right away till you reach a nice 7.5, 7.6 alkalinity of your saliva and your urine. If you're not, if you're older and you start to alkalize, it'll make you feel worse. You start to eat green salads and green drinks, and they'll start to load you down. They can stick in your stomach and not get out. You can get achy in your joints and bones. Your eyes can get very red. You can feel allergies, asthma, arthritis, all kinds of things set in. Then you are a builder. You need the acids to heal. So go to the acids to heal yourself and then cleanse. Because you needed the cleansing more than the young guy. You just couldn't do it. Okay? Do that. Normalize your blood sugar. Balance your immune system, and then healing your nervous system is going to be so much easier. So much easier. You don't bake a cake all at once. You know, it's just like orders that you do things. So do things in the right order. It'll make your life a whole bunch easier. Connect to your crown and root. Renew your mind. Memorize sacred works. Memorize sacred works. I remember one summer, I memorized like the whole chapter out of the Bible. And like I also like took a accelerated class where you had to read a book a week and write a book report and got an A in it and also got a huge promotion at work. And here's how you do it. It's very simple. You just start with the first word and memorize the first word. Okay, I got it. Duh. Okay. Then you memorize the second word. Okay. Or there is. Okay, I got two words. Then you add the third word. There is no. And then you go back and do the fourth word. Oh, what was that? So you just keep adding one word at a time. Pretty soon, you've got that memorization, whatever is super meaningful to you, not heartbreaking, achy, breaky, romancy, poetry stuff, but find something that's uplifting to your spirit, put it inside of here. It will go down into here, and it will spring up out of you like a well of life. All of a sudden, you'll be making all these connections neuronally. Will renew your neuronal connections. Straighten your spine. What does that mean? First of all, it means sleep on a hard surface. If you're on a soft surface, get off of it. Immediately. Put a board underneath at least your mattress, between the mattress and whatnot. They showed in a study over in Russia that people that would sleep on a very hard surface would lose, you know, 10 to 20 pounds just from sleeping on a hard, firm surface because their spine was not all tweaked. You know, it was very, very straight. Don't forget about the heart. There's four up pipes for every one down pipe in the nervous system. So the heart sends four times more information to the brain than the brain sends down to the heart. Don't forget about the midbrain, the GABAergic brain that gives you rest, that helps you to renew your mind and your structure, that helps you to remap yourself into new behaviors. So pituitary, pineal, hypothalamus, get those glands supported, whatever you need to do it. We've got great programs for that. This is so, so critical. Your body runs on circadian rhythms. When your rhythms get destroyed, your nervous system will be destroyed. There's this whole thing about walking at night versus walking in the day. Okay. If you want to know where your circadian rhythms are, ask yourself how you feel about life. So if you wake up in the middle of the night and somebody shines a flashlight in your eyes, you're going to go, ah, I don't like that, right? But if you're lying on a rock at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, you're going to go, ah, I like that. So we have a response to light. So the first thing in the morning, we ought to be really welcoming and receiving light. Watch the dawn. Get up early. It has secrets to tell us. Don't go back to sleep. You see? And then at night, it gets dark. Go to bed. Turn off the lights. You've got, the light is going to synchronize the entire system. If you go into the natural rhythms of light and dark, your system will naturally be self-correcting and self-healing. Viruses. Gotta look at viruses, especially women. Women are much more prone to virus than men because they have more hormone receptors on their cells, and the viruses use the hormone receptors to get inside the cells. So if you're a woman, you have a bigger chance of having a virus. How do you know if you have a virus? If you're all wound up. The more tightly you're wound, the more faster you go, the more higher your pitch, the more likely you have a virus. Viruses speed you up. Viruses get into nerves, and they run down the nerve like it was water in a pipe. They run into the spinal column. They sit in there for years. They map themselves into your DNA. They'll run right up into your brainstem. You got to get onto the antiviral program and heal the viruses. Nerves need B vitamins. What a discovery that B vitamins are so amazing. Really good B vitamins. Amazing. Even B vitamin intravenous, B vitamin injections. But we've got a good one here, B Comp. It's a great B. My wife says, and she hates to eat anyway, but she says if she takes a B Comp and a C Comp, it's a vitamin B and a vitamin C, she doesn't eat any food. She just buzzes the whole day. So a really good B vitamin goes in and does methylation on the body, supports the adrenal and cortisol system, the HPA axis, helps the genetic allele expression to express the higher order instead of the lower order. It's pretty phenomenal to always make sure you have enough B vitamins in the system. Now, sometimes you're so screwed up like me, you just can't function. I have been there. I destroyed my nervous system wholesale. I got to the point where one of the top doctors in the country was telling me, well, come down to this show in San Diego and you and me will kick it together. And we'll hang out in the booth and sell some stuff. That was my big break. I was going to have a chance to be side by side. I don't even want to mention his name. One of the top doctors, holistic doctors. I couldn't get down there. I was riding my motorcycle from Santa Cruz. It took me 12 hours to go from Santa Cruz to San Diego. It should have been 5. I ended up taking the coastal route, stopping for a beer, stopping for some coffee, stopping to hang out and rest. I just couldn't get down there. My neurological system was not letting me be clear and function and push through. And when I got down there, I met this lady. She had been in a brain trauma, and she'd healed her brain. She had a machine. You put EEG electrodes on your brain, and you've got a readout on a computer. You see left hemisphere, right hemisphere. She's reading it. Ah, you're a stress ball. Oh, you're a space cadet. And then she had little programs she could run, like ADD, ADHD, you know, neurotrauma, PTSD. And what it would do would be actually go in and heal your brain. It was amazing, amazing. She put these headphones on my table, and she goes, would you like to listen to some music? I'm like, okay. Okay. She goes, well, what do you want? Maybe some Aretha Franklin, Ray Charles, maybe a little Benedictine Monks, you know, some classical. And I'll take the Benedictine Monks. So she says, ah, holy music. And so she puts the headphones on me and says, I'll be right back. Well, the music on the CD had a skip in it. So I take the headphones off. She came back and said, what's the problem? I said, well, the music has a skip in it. She said, oh, that's not the music skipping. And I realized is that you're using this music to entrain your brain. Every time my brain would skip, the music would skip. With the little kids, they have the March of the Penguins, and the penguins stop marching. The little kids, they want the penguins to march. So their brain just starts to, it gets your brain into new pathways, new patterns. Just two of those treatments, and I was able to turn back on and come back to life. It's called the Clear Mind Center. It's in the Whitaker Center in Orange County. But man, if I was a psychiatrist or a clinical psychologist, I'd get one of those machines. Prado. She has this table that was experimental. It moves you in an infinity thing. You're lying down, and it's vibrating and stuff like that. And these lights are flashing in you. And with your neuronal pathways, remember I told you it's like a net. And once it's flowed that way, it's more likely to flow that way, which makes it more likely to flow that way, and it just digs a pit. Well, when you get a strobe light, this is, I think Disco had something there. When you get a strobe light, it actually cascade fires every nerve in your brain, and then that causes it to erase that pit a little bit. So they're strobing your light, you're going on, you're losing all of your orientation. It's somatic reprogramming. They're clearing you. Now, there's another machine out. It's less traumatic and more available called the Turbosonic. It's a vibrating platform. It uses sound speakers underneath your feet. And I've had clients who can see into other dimensions saying, I was within rings, within rings, within rings. They're moving all these vibrating frequencies. And so that's another kind of cool way to do it, is just to vibrate yourself. Maybe too many folks in your ears. There is. Who has it?
Dr. Hosbein
has it. That machine is amazing. It's an hour's worth of exercise on your body in 10 minutes, zero impact, and it rebalances your neurochemistry because of all of that beautiful vibration, all those spheres within spheres. Love the Alpha Biotics work, Jeffrey Williams. Great neuronal rebalancing. Music. Neurotoxic music. You guys know what it is. Makes you feel good. Coke. And goes along very well with it. Now, the constructive music, the most constructive music they showed is Baroque music from the Baroque era. That music, the harpsichord or whatever, is the most neurologically constructive music. Avoid the stressors. Figure out what's eating you up, what's using you up, what's damaging your nerves. I said fasting, but you know what? I've been led to fast from my news channel. I used to drive with NPR on all the time. And one time I was contemplating a fast, and the direction I was getting is just don't listen to the news anymore. 50 school children blown up in the bus today. There's this level that whenever you see something happen, it happens to you. Whenever you hear something happen, it happens to you. In the old days, did they have the news about the war in Iraq? They didn't have it. People had their village, they had their continuity, they had, so-and-so died, but it was the cycle of life, it was going on. We're barraged by bad news, negativity, and frankly, just all kinds of out-and-out fear programming. So you got to unplug. I haven't been able to watch movies. Don't really, need to so much. I'm much freer inside without them. Even something simple. It's like entertainment, it's lovely, but at the end of it, I'm disturbed. In fact, there's an appetite for disturbance. It's like my appetite when I was younger. The real thing, the real deal, comes in the next lecture, which is assessing your individual identity disturbances and healing those. So after you heal your identity and you clarify yourself from all the different identities that are mixing you up and confusing you, your neuronal pathways really start to get a boost in deep healing. And the net of it is all of us are living out of a fraction of a fraction of the potential we could be living in. See, what would your life be like if your neurochemistry was all on, if your high voltage wires and your deep current wires and your surface wireless network wires, if all of those were just connected and firing and coherent, if all of your blocks were lined up all the time, if your reptile was submitted to its rider. That's exciting to me. If you have questions about your system, you want to jumpstart, come see me. I'll help you. I'll fast track you. I won't do it. You'll do it to yourself. I'm an educator. I'll give you the tools to help you to fast track yourself into the next and the next and the next. If you get a healing, don't sin anymore. Don't go out and disturb it again. I remember getting an Ayurvedic oil massage. Oh my God, the lady was a saint. I walked out, I was so balanced, I was so perfect, I couldn't stand it. I went and had like a hot dog and three beers or something. It was like when you get your teeth cleaned and you're like, I missed something there. Where is that, like, film? So anyways, you get the window clean every day and then don't put more dirt on it, and that'll help you the best. You guys have been the best audience ever. Thank you for coming. I love you. And I hope to see you next time. All right.
Thank you, Lawrence. He will be around. We got him through Sunday night. If any of you wish to have a one-on-one